Well, hello, Modern Mystics, and welcome to our December part one of our Modern Mystics coaching call, where we're rolling into the continuation of the ABCs of Modern Mysticism. I hope you've had some time to enjoy and process parts one and two that we moved through A and G, and then H through M in November. And I hope you've had a chance to practice and to consider and to examine and to all of the letters that we talked about in those first two modules, and to as well consider your own additional letters that you are noticing in your mystical practice coming online and becoming activated, where you can look at them and go, oh, hey, yeah, I see where this letter C is coming into play, and I'm going to add that to my list of modern mystical tools. You know, my job as your teacher, your guide, your mentor on this journey is to point you in a direction that I know has worked well for me and served me well and has come online to expand and evolve my own mystical practice, and to point you in the direction, but to also encourage you to come up with ideas and practices and philosophies and understandings and applications and tools that are your own. We're not trying to shape dogma here. I'm not trying to become anybody's guru. The way that I feel rewarded as a teacher is when my students show up with new ideas and new revelations and new applications of the things that we've been learning along the way, and they become uniquely their own practice. So as always, I encourage you, as we have this conversation and we roll into part three and then the following part four of the ABCs, that as we go through the letters, as we go through all of the ideas that come on board, that if other letters and other words come online as we have the conversation, as they do for me, even as we do the teaching, that you write those things down. And then you stay open to the curiosity of how they would in fact apply to your mystical practice. And then when we, you know, down the road, when we do a live coaching call and, you know, I ask you to contribute and say, well, what words did you come up with? Or if I meet you in a live class or I talk to you in a coaching, you could say, you know, Simone, this idea came through as the letter G or the letter K. And I've really noticed how we can add it to that toolbox. So I encourage you, with all of the things that we learn in Modern Mystics, to feel free to add your own ideas. Just like, you know, an artist who goes to art school and learns all the tools and the foundations, when they go out into the world on their own, they develop their own style. At least they should. It's highly encouraged. And this is the same thing that I encourage and invite you to do with all of the things that we learn in Modern Mystics, but especially in the A to Z ABCs of Modern Mysticism. So with that said, this is, we're going to do in our December modules, we're going to do part three and part four. And as in nous, through S, as in sovereignty, and then T, as in truth, through Z, or Z, as in zero point. So this part three will be N through S, and then we'll wrap it up in part four with T through Z. So with that said, if you've got your workbook handy, make some notes and keep your notes handy, and we're going to dive into N, as in nous. N, nous, is our first N word. And we've got several words for each of our letters in today's lesson. So stay open for there to be more than just one word per letter. And as is the case, as I say, we've got several words per letter in this lesson. So nous is spelled N-O-U-S. And, you know, you could pronounce it nous or new. It just sort of depends on where you are in the world. But new or nous is a really multifaceted word as it relates to our modern mystics practice. For all intents and purposes, what nous means, or what it shapes or what it defines for us, is the divine mind, the God mind, the source mind that we all possess, but that very few of us know we have, and very few of us know how to access it. And also very few people, especially those who don't walk the mystical path, even those with a spiritual understanding but don't have a mystical or esoteric foundation, don't really quite understand. The noose is the mind of the divine mind of God, if you will, as it is expressed in the refined mystical being. You know, we've heard the saying, as a man thinks in his heart, so is he. That's, you know, a mystical statement that's exhibited in Proverbs. And this is sort of what we're talking about as well, that as we're walking our mystical path, and we use that idea of as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, as we're walking the mystical path and we're releasing our limitations of self, where we're coming from a lower and limited mind that is conditioned, that is programmed, that is shaped by the external world, that is shaped by family and culture and media and gender and religion and politics, all of the stuff that we're told is real, right, out in the physical world. If we think from that level of mind, or we operate our level of intelligence from that level of mind, then we have very little access to the true divine nature, source energy, the force, God, whatever it is that you want to call that. And that field of divine energy, it is in fact a field. It's a field of intelligence. It's not a singular being, a man on a cloud somewhere high above who's, you know, a father figure with a white beard. It is a field of intelligence. If you remember when we talked about in the letter M, where we talked about the universe being mental, this is what the level of mind that we're talking about. When we activate our own noose, that we realize that we are in fact engaged, blended, constantly connected, and a part of this divine mind, but most people are unaware. Most people who aren't mystically trained, they don't understand the equation that inner world shapes outer world, and that the physical world is an effect, and the inner world is a cause. And knowing these equations of inner world shaping outer world, and the level of mind that is required to create the kind of outcomes that we want, so as a man thinks in his heart, so is he, that we as mystics, are we who remember these equations, and that we are constantly connected to this divine mind, and it's our job in our mystical practice to clear away all that is false, then eventually over time, we become more and more guided by this higher level of noose, of higher divine mind, where the mystical equation of my will and the Father's will are one, meaning our will, our creative desires, our inspirations, the things that we want to create, the things that we feel an impulse to go do or have or shape, that there becomes no separation between that impulse of intelligence and the creative impulse of the source itself, right? And so as we, if we were just to use the word mind, you know, that's a little too vague. So what we're talking about as it relates to noose is we're talking about a direct, intuitive appreciation of truth, where we apprehend, where we're able to glean what truth really is, not through reasoned argument, not through debate, not through statistics, not through data, not through past experience, but where we are able to really sense and feel the truth as something that is simply so. You know, when we look at a beautiful tree or a beautiful mountain and we're struck by the beauty that's there and we know that that is true, or we hear a statement, whether through our mystical teaching or while we're out and about in the world, or we feel an intuitive impulse and we just know that it's true. It's not because we've done a whole bunch of research or, you know, we've talked to Oprah and her favorite things and gotten approval and appreciation, or if we talked to our family and gotten all of our friends' input, but we just know within ourselves that something is inherently true. And so this nous, this level of mind, this level of wisdom, this level of intelligence is cultivated, you know, certainly through study and through training our faculties and through doing all of the work that we do in our modern mystics work, but it's also done through our meditation. It's also done through contemplation. It's also done through inquiry and through the whole range of spiritual practice. But it's also applied, you know, you'll hear me say over and over again, as you already have, that there's no, if you can't take your mystical practice into your real life, if the only place you're really strong is on your meditation pillow, then so what? And so we want to be able to apply this wisdom to everything we do, and to be aware of it in every waking moment. And so what we're developing through our mystical practice is something higher than our logical brain that thrives on data and information and stuff in books and book knowledge, if you will. And so it's higher than that. And it's also deeper than the emotions, because as we're becoming very well aware, part of our mystical practice and giving us this access to the doorway of true mystical power, where we are constantly and continuously aware of our engagement with source energy, is neutralizing those emotional polarities, right? The swing of back and forth of happiness and sadness and bliss and rage and all those other things, by really learning how to map those emotional polarities, experience them, see them, witness them, but realize that they are just, you know, surges of energy. They are not in fact who we really are. That as we develop our nous, then we rise above the reasoning brain and the reasoning mind, and we rise above the sway of emotions. Think of nous as being the level of mind that, if you imagine a pendulum swinging, and you imagine the pendulum swinging back and forth, that the nous, the power of mind, is the still high center point above all of that activity below. All right? The only way a pendulum can work as it swings back and forth is if there's a still high center point at the top. And that is the level of mind that nous talks about. And this is also sort of what is meant by, when we talk about, as we integrate our polarities, and we'll talk about polarity here a little bit more as we move into P, that as we map all sides of polarities and bring everything into a unified energy, then that is also what is meant by let thine eye be single, which is also a mystical statement. It doesn't mean the third eye in the head, which is what a lot of people tend to think, but it's the wisdom that comes on board when these levels of mind, of intellect and intuition, of balanced intellect and emotions, are all brought into this center point of power. It is the intelligence that gives us greater access to source energy. And so when it's amplified and purified and brought online, it becomes the eye of the soul, if you will. It becomes the wisdom that leads us, okay? And as this nous comes online, as we continue to do our refining and our alchemical work, then this nous, this level of mind that is one with the creative force of the universe, starts to become the dominant leader of our personality, right? So most people on the planet are led by their personality that is limited, that is, again, shaped by conditioning and constructs and programming. When nous becomes activated and really identified with, this level of mind is what becomes our true leader. Again, bringing us to the mystical statement of the Father and I are one, meaning that this level of mind, this level of intelligence that guides the universe and I, meaning you as the individual, there's no separation between those two things. And it starts to be what leads you towards shaping your life in a beautiful way, all right? So it starts to rule over the kingdom of yourself. It starts to direct and steer your life. It starts to rule spiritual harmony, and it ultimately will, again, with the mystical statement is, if thine, let thine eye be single and thy entire body will be full of light. This becomes sort of the portal or the doorway through which that higher refined soul source energy then can move through us. And because our lenses and our filters of restriction and programming and conditioning have been so cleared away, that all that can happen then after the fact is that light will emerge from us. Again, it's like cleaning. I always say it's like cleaning the schmutz off of all of the facets of our personal soul diamond. When those, all of that schmutz and dust and distortion is cleared away, that our true light can't help but shine through us. Okay. And so essentially what it is it's the highest faculty in man. When we do our mystical work and we practice and we study and we do our alchemical processes where we become purified and refined, that it starts to guide us and it understands divine truth by means of immediate experience from intuition or simple cognition and awareness. It's what might be called the eye of the heart. Right. So this is what every mystic sets out to develop, this relationship, this engagement of letting go of the limited structures of the lower mind and doing the work that is required to start to identify with this higher level of nous as this higher level of nous. So it becomes an active partnership so that eventually over time, there becomes no distinction between this higher level of mind and you as an individual. Right. Again, in the mystical story of Jesus, Jesus was the personality, the man. Christ was who he became when nous became highly activated within him, which is why he could say, the Father and I are one. Right? And no man shall enter the kingdom of heaven except through me. And what he was saying when he said that, it wasn't about Jesus, the personality. What he was saying, it was nous speaking, N-O-U-S, the higher mind of the created source energy was saying this, no man shall enter the kingdom of heaven except through me, meaning nobody can access this realm of creative power unless he does it through nous, through this higher level of mind. And so that's what we're doing in our mystical practice. We're breaking apart the structures of limited self. We're pointing ourselves in the direction of elevated soul, and we are making it our focus so that we start doing everything in our life from that higher refined level, and then that manifests itself as greater health, greater well-being, greater wealth, greater creativity, greater love, etc. Okay, so that is the story of nous, and we will talk more about nous in the new year as we roll into 2018, because it's going to be a really important thing for us to continue to develop and consider as we move forward and upwards in our mystical practice. So we'll talk a lot more about that in 2018. So for now, I want you to consider nous, N-O-U-S. The second N is nature. And specifically as it relates to nature, we're going to talk about two aspects of nature. The one most obvious being that the impulse of nature, the code of nature, is as close as we get to the divine mind in an organic way as possible, which is why being out in nature or having some form of nature around you is really, really important, because nature does not carry the influences of lower mind. You know, a tree, a river, a sunset, a herd of antelope, they have not been influenced by the field of mind that is man. Now, a lot of domestic animals, our cats, our dogs, our horses, our cows, our sheep, you know, the more and more of those animals that we domesticate, the more and more of those animals become sort of conditioned to our own limited habits. You know, you hear about dogs and cats and, you know, having anxiety disorders and panic attacks, and they're getting cancer, and you know, they've got aggression problems and all this other stuff. Well, that comes from years of conditioning of hanging out with men, right? Their mind is being influenced, and I don't want to say poisoned, but perhaps that's an appropriate word, by the mind of man. And so nature, like big nature, mountains and rivers and streams and trees and flowers and grass, is really, really important for us to make it a point to deliberately engage with as often as we can, if not daily, then at least weekly, to get out into nature, to get out and hug a tree, a really big tree, a whole bunch of trees, and sit under the big sky of a mountain and just really experience in a big way the natural flow of that divine inspiration, that divine energetic pulse, that divine wisdom stream. It happens very profoundly in nature. And so when you go out in nature and you spend time there, if you can spend enough time out there, eventually your natural rhythms will settle into the natural rhythms of nature. So I really encourage every modern mystic, regardless of the level that you're at, that even if it means out walking around a golf course, if you live in a city, or finding a patch of grass to go and sit and look at the sky, or if that's hard for you because you live smack dab in the middle of the city, then to grow a little garden in a bunch of pots and have it on your windowsill or out on your patio, to have something that in your world, in your life, that is really connected and linked and engaged with the stream of energy that is true wisdom, that is linked to nous, as we talked about, and do your best to merge with it, to blend with it, to experience it, to become one with it. And it will start to alter how you process information, and it will bring you online into that mind of nous that we just talked about. And the second aspect of nature is that if we hang out in nature more often, what it starts to help us do is it starts us to help us recognize where things in our life and our world are unnatural, or what I might call synthetic. Because the majority of the world that we see and experience out in the world today, through media and entertainment and culture and politics and even a lot of spiritual teachings, are synthetic. They're unnatural. They're not based on the foundation of these understandings of mystical processes and the ideas of polarity and this higher mind of nous. And so they become quite synthetic. But where this idea of nature being able to point us in the direction of things that are unnatural is that if you don't recognize what the impulse of nature is, then you won't recognize when you're swimming in the middle of a pool of stuff that is unnatural. Right. It is unnatural for our creativity to be suppressed. It is unnatural for us to be in environments that don't resonate with us. It's unnatural for us to be locked into an idea of political affiliation or country or religion, you know, for us to, you know, who decides where those lines go that makes you an American or a Canadian or a German, like those lines are unnatural. Although they help us sort of practice discernment and decide on the things that we like and value, you'll notice that more and more that the things that we see and experience in the world out there as a whole are starting to feel really synthetic, really unnatural. If you go on social media, it, at least for me, I have a hard time on Facebook because it's very synthetic. It's not the same as having a sit down conversation or a telephone call with somebody, or, you know, sitting down in a retreat and having face to face time with other people or face to face time with the teacher. It's very artificial. And so I want you to start to pay attention to how things in the outer world feel unnatural and to spend as much time as you can out in nature so that you can start to refine that natural impulse within you to bring it back online. Which, and that natural impulse, the thing that guides the stars and the planets and tells trees how to grow and all of that other stuff, is our natural impulse as well. So use nature as an ally. Get out in it as often as you can to help recalibrate, rebalance, reorder, reorganize your own signal system, your own intelligence system. And pay attention to when you're looking out in the physical world, the stuff that is created that how much of it feels unnatural, twisted, distorted, imbalanced, disorganized, inauthentic, right? Not aligned with nous. Okay, so that's where you start to sort of check in with yourself. Helps you develop your powers of discernment and refinement and choice. And if it does feel unnatural, if it does feel synthetic, you go, I don't want to be involved in that at all. Even if there's a bunch of other people out there telling you that it's important, you get to decide whether or not it is natural. And you get to decide whether or not it's something you want to participate in, because your nous has directed you into what is wise and appropriate for you to participate in. And the third N is now. Now, this present moment is where nous, N-O-U-S, the divine mind, moves. It doesn't move in the past. If we're thinking about the past, if we're hanging out in the past, divine mind, it's like the door is closed to that level of wisdom. And if we're worried or projecting into the future, it can't come through that doorway either. So this is why whenever we do any of our mystical work, we're very cognizant of being in the present moment, not only as it relates to our awareness, but when we're doing any of our creative work, we are also claiming that the outcomes that we want to shape are here for us now. They're not coming for us in the future. They're here now. Remember, this brings us back to the letter H, to he who has, having. He who has in consciousness now, even more shall be given to him in the physical world. So this now idea is not only as it relates to our present moment awareness and really refining and disciplining our awareness so that we're staying as present as we can in any given moment, but that also when we're doing any of our creative work, that we are declaring that our outcomes, our healing, our prosperity, our wellness is here now. And when we're in that now moment, then again, that doorway through which the divine impulse, source energy, the force can then flow, we become the vessel for that. We become the stargate, if you will. The door opens through the now moment. And so I want you to check in with yourself to see how much time you spend in the past, either dwelling on it or being sad about it or reveling in it. Oh, those were the good old days, or, oh man, those were the bad old days, or worried about the future. Just check in with yourself and see how much time you're spending in those two realms. And just check in with yourself moment to moment. Say, am I present? Am I present? Am I present? And what you'll notice is that it will start to get easier to catch yourself and realizing that part of the process of catching yourself is the refinement process in and of itself. It will be really hard to be always in the now. The unrefined mind will slip off and, you know, think about what you got to do tomorrow or, you know, fret about what you did yesterday. That's fine. You know, it's okay for you to slip out every once in a while, and that's okay. Part of developing the mastery is being able to catch yourself when you do slip out and bring yourself back, right? Because stuff happens. And that's where you start to develop your muscles, your mystical muscles, is to be able to catch yourself, bring yourself back into the present moment. That in and itself is a spiritual practice. And but to be able to try to spend as much time as you can in the present moment, not only as you go about your day-to-day stuff, but as you're doing your creative work, your mystical work, your meditative work, that the outcomes you want are here now. It's just going to take time for them to condense into the physical world. And as long as you maintain the knowing that the outcomes that you want are here now, more quickly then will those outcomes condense and then start to sort of rain, R-A-I-N, condense into your physical world. All right. You know, just think of the idea that if a child gets stuck under a car, pinned under a car, you've heard of these fantastic tales that a tiny little mom is able to lift the car off of her child because the child is being pinned. Well, what happens in that moment is the thinking mind, the lower mind, shuts off. The mind becomes very, very present and very attuned to what needs to happen in this moment. And in that present moment, then, Nous comes online, the power of divine force, which gives that tiny little woman the ability to lift the car off the child. It's not, you know, divine intervention. Well, it is divine intervention, but not in the way a lot of people think. You know, it's not like other angels are coming to lift off the car. It's that the person or whatever the dire circumstance is, something happens in the physical world that shuts down the limitations of thinking mind and brings all of the awareness into the present moment. And in that moment where everything is still and slow, and in this present moment of now, the doorway opens and then Nous moves in. And miracles happen, right? But then what happens after the fact is that person then goes back to running the same programs that they always did. The trauma has passed, the little kid is safe, and they fall back into their old patterns. And so they have a hard time creating any sort of other miracles because they don't have access to that doorway. But it was shown to them in that brief moment, and what was happening through extreme trauma and stressful situation, the mind was brought into the present now. And in that moment, it opens the doorway to Nous. Okay, so I want you to consider these ends, Nous, nature, and now. And think about as you go about your day and go about your practice, what other ends you might be able to add to your list. Okay, so we're going to move into O. And the first O is order. Again, using the idea of inner world shapes outer world, and again, sort of using not only the idea of order, but also disorder, the inner world shapes the outer world. So if we look at what's going on in the outer world in our physical reality, there's a lot of disorder out there. And, you know, fires and earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes and, you know, you name it, the elements out there in nature are very disordered and causing a lot of chaos. So that's also in some ways a reflection of the inner levels of consciousness that are going on, because the earth responds to our consciousness. It's not separate from us. And so as we start to refine our practice and we start to integrate these levels of polarity, and we do our work focusing on peace and power, what that does is that starts to bring order into our mind. It starts to bring order into our consciousness. It starts to bring order into how we perceive the world. It starts to bring order into how we take action, order in how we move about the world. It becomes very balanced, very organic. There's another O. It becomes organic. It becomes more aligned with nature. It's, you know, again, this idea of nature, everything that drives nature, the signal, if you will, that comes from the universal impulse is organic. And the more order we have within our system, the more organic our reception, our perception, our ability to connect with divine intelligence and receive knowledge and information becomes. Again, we start to break that cycle of synthetic information that feels so unnatural to us. But I also want you to realize as well that through this position point of order, that sometimes in that position point of order, there will be flux. There will be shifting, there will be moving, there will be things that break apart, there will be things that are broken down, there will be things that change and shift. You know, even in order, it's important to remember that order does not mean stagnant or stillness. It just means that the natural impulse, the flow of source energy, the flow of that intelligence, is coherent, is balanced, is you know, even if there's a lot of shifting and changing, there's an order to it. On some days, our lives may be very, very busy and there's a lot of stuff happening, but we are able to maintain our inner order, our inner balance, our inner coherence, so that we're able to manage those busier times with a sense of grace. And then there's going to be other times when part of the natural order is for things to be quiet, is for things to be feminine in their nature, whereas when things are active and busy, that's masculine in their nature. And that whether things are in flux, which is a part of the alchemical process, or they are they're solid, which is very rare, but you know, something is either in flux or it's still stable, right? To be in order, when we are in order in our inner world, then we're able to manage and navigate those natural impulses and flows of the organic tides with stability. And we're able to recognize and look out into the world and look out into our lives and be like, okay, this is just like in a river, where sometimes the river flows swiftly and there's lots of white water, and other times the river flows very slow, it's very calm. We realize that the river in itself is an entire living organism. And if you look, if you rise up above and you look at that river from high above, you see great order in the entire system, from the snow that melts on the top of the mountain and rushes down the mountain face and then settles and crashes into the valleys and the rivers, and then flows with white water and then slows down and then moves with greater abundance, greater velocity against the rocks. We realize that if we look above, we see that there's great order and meaning in all of those processes. And regardless of, and so our life is that same sort of process, especially if we're deliberately using our mystical work to transform our lives, that we're going to realize that there are going to be different experiences, different energetic velocities, different energetic transformative stages. But if we realize that regardless of what stage we're in, that there is a massive order carried within that process, and if we can maintain our inner order, even when it feels like or seems like things are disordered on the outside, the more inner order we can maintain, the more elegantly we'll be able to move through these processes. And again, to be inner order does not mean to be dull at all. Again, thinking of the idea that when we sit in our position point of peace and power, that position point of stillness gives us great access to energetic resources. So don't for a moment think that to be inwardly ordered means to be dull. Not at all. Just think of the idea of a ninja warrior or a Qigong master. Very, very powerful beings with great inner order, right? So I want you to really check on your inner order. And if things appear in your world to be maybe moving through a lot of white water, things are really turbulent and a lot of stuff is really being churned around, or on the other hand, where it seems like things aren't really moving, if you can be okay in that moment, wherever you are, if you can maintain your inner order, regardless of whether it's turbulence or it seems like things aren't moving at all, if you can be okay and ordered wherever you are at that moment, then you'll be able to navigate your way through that time frame with greater access. Brings us back to the letter N, with greater access to nous, greater access to wisdom, greater access to your intuition and your guidance. But if you're battling against whatever's happening for you at any given time, then you're going to create disorder and it's going to be harder for you to manage and navigate through that system at any given time. Now, it's not to say that you say, oh, my life is a real disaster, well, I'm just going to accept it. No, that's not what we're saying at all. Ultimately, your goal is to, you know, develop whatever powers that you're wanting to develop or create the outcomes that you're wanting to create. So you always keep your vision on the goal, but you're okay. Here's another O. You're okay with where you are at any given moment, right? Again, thinking of the idea, if your goal is to climb to the top of Mount Everest, it's sort of the opposite of the guy at the top of the mountain who wants to get to the ocean. If you're wanting to climb Mount Everest, some days along the road, along the path, you're going to have to really work hard to get up the face of the mountain. Other days you're going to have to rest because you need to acclimate your body to new altitudes. Some days the wind will be there and it will be really violent and you can't move at all. Some days it'll be sunny and clear and you can make good headway. But wherever you are along that trajectory, wherever you are along in your life, which is your own individual journey, if you can maintain order within yourself and be okay with where you are on that journey at any given time, but still maintaining your focus, your eye, your vision on the top of the mountain, then eventually over time, you'll get there. But if you are disordered and freaked out and not okay with where you are at any given moment, then that will shift you out of balance and it will cut off that access to noose that is so important for us. Okay. And then the final O is ownership. We talked about this a little bit before when we were talking about the letter E and having to earn our mastery, that I want you to claim ownership of your mystical practice, to claim ownership of your higher faculties of divine wisdom and divine knowledge, to claim ownership of your power, to claim ownership of your wisdom, to claim ownership of your divine identity. It is yours. It's not, but you do have to kind of claim it. I don't even say kind of claim it. You do have to claim it. You have to say, this is mine. I am a divine spark of source energy itself. There's like a firework that shoots off all of these little sparks. I am one of those sparks that has come from the divine explosion of source energy. I am that. That is me. I am it. It is me. It is mine. I am it. And make these declarative ownership statements and really claim it. Because if you don't have the courage to claim ownership, then again, thinking of the idea of providing a powerful doorway through which this wisdom and information and intelligence can move, then it's kind of like having that doorway sealed shut, right? And this idea of ownership sort of it stirs up ideas of ego and unworthiness. And so if I'm encouraging you to claim ownership and you notice issues of, that's really egoic, I shouldn't do that, or I'm unworthy, or who am I to think that I'm that powerful? Well, then you've got some real strong reflecting to do and some shadow work to go do about it. Because if you're not willing to claim that degree of power and that you are sort of like a right, it is your rightful inheritance, and it is your rightful inheritance. You, as a divine child or a divine spark of source energy, that energy is your creative mother and creative father. You are the child of that union, and by rights, you have an inheritance to everything that divine mother and father have to offer. Health, happiness, creativity, enlightenment, peace, joy, grace, power, strength, all of those things that are a part of the impulse of nature. That is your divine inheritance, and you must claim it. So I want you to sort of settle into this idea of ownership and start getting comfortable with the idea of saying, this is mine and I claim it. This power is mine and I claim it. This clarity is mine and I claim it. This potential is mine and I claim it. This prosperity is mine and it's here now and I claim it. And what that process starts to do is, again, it opens the door energetically then through you, so that then over time, those realities start to condense in and appear in the real world. But without your ability to powerfully claim ownership, your mystical powers, your mystical skill, your mystical clarity will be wimpy. It will be impotent. It will be weak. And, you know, this is sort of, again, where the idea of the spiritual warrior comes online, that says, yes, this is what I claim, and no, this is what I no longer claim. And realize as well that this identity and understanding these things, when you start to claim this level, these levels of ownership, and doing it from an understanding of these spiritual principles, then ego doesn't become an issue at all. It becomes, it's like, it just becomes who you are, right? I always say when I'm coaching or teaching, especially with new students who start to have really powerful, profound spiritual experiences in their life, I say, and they get really weirded out by it. They're like, oh my gosh, that was so cool. And I had this vision and this magical stuff happened. And I took this amazing trip. I said, okay, I don't want you to freak out about that, because that's just normal for a mystic. It's no big deal. That's just who you are becoming. It's just who you are. And the more normal that becomes, the more ownership you take of it, that just becomes who you are. It's like, you know, a millionaire claims ownership of their money. They're a millionaire. They own it. It's like, yes, I have this kind of money. It's no big deal. It's just who I am. It's the kind of money I have. It's no big whoop. Yeah, I have that kind of money and I plan on making a heck of a lot more of it. That's just who they are. Again, this is in their having, right? Claiming ownership generates the idea of having in consciousness. If you claim ownership that you are the divine child of the source energy and that you have access to all of its skill set, then eventually over time that will become your nature of having. It will become no big deal, right? It's no big deal for a multimillionaire to buy whatever they want, and they, you know, there's no shame in it. That's just who they are. It's no big deal for a top-ranked neurosurgeon to cut open somebody's brain and, you know, cut out a tumor. That's just who they are. It's what they do. And they own that. You know, it's no big deal for an Olympic gymnast to do a round-off double back handspring, triple back layout. That's just who they are. They own it, right? And this ownership accelerates our ability to have it, to possess it. What a lot of people will say is, they're like, well, you know, I'm not worthy, or I'm going to be egoic, or I'm not ready, or who do I think I am to think that I can have access to that much power? Well, you need to get over that, because that's going to be one of the things that stands in your way. And there's another O, get over it. Again, it's not an idea of ego. If you want these levels of clarity and intuition and intelligence, then this is what you have to do. You have to claim ownership of it. It's not going to just show up. You have to claim it first. Right? It brings us back to one of our C's. If you choose, you have to choose. You know, remember that choice comes first and then clarity emerges. So ownership needs to come first, and then the power will follow. Okay? So start claiming it. And if you feel uncomfortable, well, fine. Just practice it until you start to feel comfortable. You know, have that conversation. I'm a divine spark of the creative firework that is the universal impulse. And I am a rightful inheritor of all of its skills, gifts, powers, and blessings. I am blessed. I am prospered. I am divinely guided. I am supported. Whatever those things you want, own that. Own it first on the inside. Have it first on consciousness, and it will start to appear on the outside. Okay, so those are our O's. So the P's, let's roll into P. And, you know, we've been talking about peace and power a lot. And I don't want to go too deeply into that, because, you know, really peace and power is the foundation of our mystical practice. So we've got a strong understanding of the peace and power equation. But just let me touch on it briefly as it relates to peace and power. Peace and power is where we build our mystical foundation. Peace and power gives us the ability to set up order energetically, to be able to get still within the creative, you know, the creative mind, to be able to still our mind so that we can access and become open and aware of this noose that we talk about. Peace is the feminine material aspect. It is negatively charged. Not negative meaning bad, but negatively in its electrical charge. Power is the positive, masculine, spiritual part of the equation. And where those two things meet, where they intersect, is this complete neutralization of all polarity, puts us in that position point to, again, open that door, open the stargate, open the portal through which nous, the divine mind, can travel. So when this idea of peace and power is activated and it starts to become our natural signal, again, bringing us back to that letter N, and we start to break apart all of the synthetic and unnatural signals that we've been conditioned about, then we gain greater and greater mystical power, greater and greater mystical mastery. The thoughts that we have, the inspirations that we have, we're able to more elegantly, profoundly, proficiently, there's a couple more P's, profound and proficient, bring them into being, right? And so this is where every modern mystic starts. And again, realizing that at this intersection of peace and power, it's not at all stagnant. It's not at all impotent. It's very potent. There's another P, potent, right? And realizing that power is the ability to move, shape, guide, and direct spiritual energy, and to have peace at the core of it allows us to manage that degree of high energy without losing our marbles, without becoming afraid of it, without being intimidated. It allows us to stay clear and emotionally balanced and inwardly still, right? So the peace and power equation is very, very important for us. And I know that every single one of you guys who, you know, has either coached with me or is a member of Modern Mystics or has taken a class where we start with this work, you're all amazed and blown away by how quickly this idea of peace and power starts to take root within you if you're persistent with it. And there's another P, persistent. We have to be persistent with our practice. There's another P, right? This, you know, this is again sort of the idea of ownership. Anyone who wants to develop mastery in anything, whether it's rocket science or herbology or brain science or animal communication or child rearing, you have to be persistent in your practice. And this is why, you know, taking a few minutes every day to settle into that equation of peace and power is so, so, so important. And ultimately, you know, it doesn't need to be a ritual. It's, you know, think of it like it's and any more than brushing your teeth in the morning becomes a ritual. It's not something that you think, oh my God, if I don't do this, I'm going to burst into flames. No, you do it because it's an idea of self-care and self-maintenance, and it's important, right? And ultimately, as you get more and more proficient at it, you know, you take your time in the morning, you check in with peace and power just to sort of give yourself a good tone for the day. And you touch in with it throughout the day, like, oh, okay, am I out of order here, or am I in my position of peace and power? And so it becomes a tool. It becomes a tool. It doesn't become a crutch, right? I want you to make a clear distinction about that, because a lot of people will get addicted to their practice and their rituals, and they'll be like, oh my God, if I don't, you know, and you know, some religions are the same. They say, if I don't pray five times a day, then I'm going to lose contact with God. Well, I mean, I understand why they're doing it, but you don't, as mystics, we want to be able to be sure that we're in that position point of peace and power, regardless of what we're doing. That, you know, if we're in the middle of a meeting, or we're middle of traffic, or in the middle of talking to our teenager, or, you know, we don't want to have to stop and say, can you just excuse me for a second? I'm just going to go out for 5 minutes and get into my position point of peace and power. I'm just going to go do some meditating. That's not our mastery in action, right? But so we want to be able to have access to this peace and power position point whenever we need it, right? And so it doesn't become, again, so it becomes a tool we can use whenever we need it. It doesn't become a crutch, right? And so as that idea of peace and power and persistent practice and profound, proficient potency comes online, there's a lot of P's there. Then another P comes up, and that is expanded perception. Ultimately, you know, this brings us back to the idea of Noos that says, if we do this work, then let thine eye be single, and the light, our body shall be filled with light. Well, what that also indicates is that as we do this work, our perception, our ability to perceive divinely, will start to expand. And the things that we do perceive in our world will start to shift. That if we remember how our reality is created, it is a projection. And there's another P, that our reality does not come to us. We do not attract it. It comes through us as a projection or a reflection of our consciousness. And so as we refine this work and settle into all of the things that we're talking about, Noos and nature and now and order and ownership and power and peace, that our perception starts to shift in relation to who we are becoming and the kind of energy that we're moving through our system at any given time. Think of it like an old-fashioned movie projector, that the light, you know, you had to run film through a moving motion picture detector, a motion picture projector. You had to plug that machine into a piece of electricity and burn and push light through it so the pictures would move and you'd see an image on the screen, right? Well, the electricity that is moving through the machine is source energy. The light is our soul, is our Noos, and then the images that we see on the wall are a manifestation of what's being carried in our consciousness. That is what we are perceiving, is the imagery on the wall. That is our perception. And so as we do our mystical work, we focus on peace and power and ownership and, you know, all of that stuff that we've talked about up until now, then over time, what it's like is it's like changing the film in our projector, changing the pictures that are running through the machinery so that the images that we see in our reality ultimately will change. And so what we're doing through all of this work is we're altering the film in our inner projector, and that is going to alter our perception. It's going to alter how we think. It's going to alter what we experience. It's going to alter what we see in our world. It's going to alter the kind of people we interact with. It's going to alter the things that we agree to do. It's going to alter the things that we agree to no longer do. It's going to alter how we perceive our money, how we perceive our health, how we perceive our relationships. It's going to alter how we perceive the natural world as a whole, how we perceive politics, how we perceive everything that we experience in the external world. Perception gets completely altered, right? Remembering our equation that being, who we are being shapes our doing and our having, that is an equation of perception. Who we are being shapes what we have. Well, who we are being shapes our perception, but it starts with the inside and works its way out, right? So we'll notice that as we do our mystical work, that slowly, gradually over time, our perceptions start to shift. And it's not because of something we attract, it's because of something we become, right? Another P on our list is polarity, right? And we've been talking about polarity from the very beginning, that the 3D world that we exist in could not exist without polarity, right? Up, down, hot, cold, masculine, feminine, light, dark, positive electrical charge, negative electrical charge, the physical three-dimensional world must be polarized in order for it to exist, right? So the spiritual new age practice that says, oh, I'm just going to hang out in the light and vibrate high, nothing is going to change there because it can't. It has to be, the light carries the dark. The dark carries the light. Can't exist without the other in the three-dimensional reality, right? If you move into other dimensional realities that are more spiritual in nature, then yes, that equation of polarity starts to break apart. And in those higher, more, fourth and fifth and sixth and seventh dimensions that are more spiritualized, yes, there is no polarity. You don't need it to have an experience. But we need polarity in this third dimensional reality. And so our job as mystics, in order to be able to access that mind of nous, N-O-U-S, and gain direct access to source energy, is our job is to map polarity, to experience polarity in all of its colors. When joy shows up, that we really witness it and observe it and we feel it and we sense it and we savor it and we taste it. And when sadness shows up, we do the same thing. We witness it and we feel it and we see what it's showing us and we inquire about what the underlying energy is and we express it. And we realize that those feelings, those energies, those emotions, those polarities, whether they're sadness or joy, they're really not us. They're just expressions of energies that are part of the three-dimensional experience. And so as mystics, we love polarity. And when something makes us sad, we look at it and we feel it. And we don't resist it. We don't pretend it's not there. We really examine it. We really witness it. If it comes up that we want to cry and have a good cry, then we feel that. We really let it move through us. And it's only temporary because it's a wave of energy. That's all it is. And it'll move if we give it that kind of care. The same thing with joy. We can't hang out in joy all the time. Again, think of it like a pendulum. That in this 3D reality, a pendulum will swing. If you hold a pendulum from the top and you swing it, it's not going to stay in one position. It's not just going to swing to the left and stay there. It's going to move because we exist in a 3D polarity. And so we as mystics, we're not afraid of any aspect of the polarity scale. And the more we are willing to map it and look at all aspects of ourselves, look at our joy and our bliss and our sexiness and our happiness and our shyness and our cheekiness, and look at our rage and our anger and our jealousy and our shame and our sadness, that what starts to happen is more and more authenticity comes online. More and more kinks of our energetic hose are cleared out of the way that starts to open that doorway once again to nous. Right. So as modern mystics, we understand that this mythology that there is only light. Again, that is a true statement if you're existing in the higher dimensions, if you're not hanging out in the three dimensional reality, if you're hanging out in 5D, 6D, 7D, that's true. There is no polarity because there's no physical form in those higher realities. And so we don't need polarity. It's just energy. Right. But here in the 3D, and this is where we exist now, this is our concern. This is our playing field. And so if we're playing in this playing field of the three-dimensional reality, then the tools that will support us in being able to do that in a magical way, miracle-making way, is this understanding of polarity. We as mystics want the doorway for nous to be wide open. And we do that by understanding this term of polarity and learning how to play with it. Play. There's another P. And the idea of play is really important. And as we start to understand these principles, oh, there's another P. All sorts of P's all over the place. Right? If we understand these principles, right, that 2 + 2 = 4, it's not personal. Oh, there's another P. Oh my gosh, we're just peeing all over the place here. It's not personal, it's principle. God is no respecter of humans. It's a mystical statement. It's principle. If you work within these ideas and these principles and these understandings, then you'll be able to partner. There's another P. You'll be able to partner with this field of intelligence in a playful way. right? Now, just think of the idea of being an artist or somebody who's learning to drive a car or being a musician. At first, you have to be really diligent with understanding the principles, with learning them. When you're learning something, you have to practice it. It's hard. But when you get really good at it, it becomes play. It just becomes play. You get to riff and improvise and have fun and be like, ha, let's see how I would create this. I understand the principles here. Inner world shapes outer world. Consciousness shapes reality. Peace and power influences perception. Okay, I understand these principles. How can I play? All sorts of peace. P, everywhere, right? So consider all of these P's and how application of all of these principles is going to alter your perception. And if you have fun, the more now, and as you start to learn the principles, think of it like, again, like driving a car. When you first learned to drive a car, you had to really think hard about the principles of this. Okay, if I push this pedal, the car moves forward. If I push this pedal, the car stops. If I push this button, a light goes on and turns me this way. If I push this button, the light goes on, and that means I'm going to turn the other way. At the beginning, you have to be really diligent about it. But later, once you've practiced it, it becomes so organic that some people will then go on to taking, you know, driving a car into play, where they're a race car driver, or they're an off-road driver, or they're an Uber driver. It just becomes play. It's the same with our mystical practice. Okay, so understanding this idea of polarity, we love polarity. We love all shades of polarity. The good, the bad, the ugly, the indifferent, the sad, the happy, the blissful, the joyful, the creative, the destructive. Realize that in order for creation to happen, destruction's got to happen. In order for there to be light, we've got to have an experience of dark. In order for there to be joy, there needs to be an opposite of sadness. In order for there to be a coin, there needs to be a head and a tail. In order for there to be life, there needs to be a masculine and a feminine. In the 3D, they are essential. And so we as mystics embrace it all. And then that becomes playful, right? All right, there's a lot of P's there to cover, guys. If you come up with some more, write them down on your sheet. All right, let's roll into our Q's. Q. The first Q I want to talk about is quality. Quality. And realize that there is a... modern mystics who are aligned with the truth of divine energy, we love quality. We love quality people. We love quality teachings. We love quality surroundings. We love quality food. We love quality time. We love quality connection. We love quality art. We love quality music. We love quality chocolate. We love quality quiet time. And quiet is another cue. But quality is really, really important. And unfortunately, we've been conditioned in the New Age that we're told that if we have a discerning line of quality where we say, this is good and I like this and I will accept this in my life, and this isn't so good. This quality of person or quality of environment or quality of work or quality of food isn't okay. And I don't want to accept it in my life. We're told in our spiritual practice that that's bad and that's wrong to be a discerner of quality. And unfortunately, what that's doing is it's limiting our ability to accept beauty and goodness into our life. Think of the idea of if you had the choice to drive a beautiful Mercedes or a beautiful Porsche and all of the fine craftsmanship that went into that car, or you had to choose between that and driving a go-kart, you know, with a wooden box with wheels on it. What would you choose? what would resonate more beautifully with you, the level of craftsmanship that goes into making the Porsche or the Mercedes, or the level of craftsmanship that goes into making the box car with wheels? Kind of quality or is involved there. If you had the choice of wearing a beautiful handmade, hand-dialed watch, a Swiss watch or a German watch, or wearing a $5 digital watch that you bought at the corner store, or if you had the choice of having a beautiful, beautiful garden in your backyard with roses and lilacs and rosemary and pine trees and bougainvillea and lavender, or you had a yard full of weeds, or you had the choice of spending time with excellent quality people who are mystically aware and conditioned, or hanging out with a bunch of people who were, you know, waving signs and screaming and picking fights and that sort of thing, or even the choice of staying alone, having quality time alone with yourself, or unquality time being surrounded by a bunch of people who lack quality. Think of those things. You'd go to an art museum and you see the Mona Lisa or a Caravaggio or a Picasso or a Van Gogh or any of the artistry done by Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci. And then you go into another more modern art museum and you see paintings that are made out of elephant dung and dead animal parts and, you know, people wiping their butt all over a canvas and covering it with paint and saying that that's art. Quality is really, really important to a mystic. And it becomes, again, it becomes something that's not about ego. It becomes something that is natural. It brings us back to the idea of nature. And that what nature is nature is such high quality, right? You go into a rainforest and you see the quality of growth that comes out of a tree and the level of luxury and intricacy and beauty that is so inherent with nature. And we're told that if we have that kind of distinction or that discernment, or we claim ownership that that's the kind of quality that we want in our lives, then we're told that we're arrogant or egoic or we're materialistic, and it's discrimination, or it's racist, or it's sexist, or it's, you know, name the ist, whatever it is, that it says it's not okay for us to be selective over the kinds of quality that we have in our life, whether it's, again, whether it's people, whether it's teachings, whether it's food, whether it's money, whether anything. So I want you to start to get comfortable with claiming and allowing yourself to claim a certain level of high quality, of excellence. Excellent people, excellent friends, excellent clients, excellent customers, excellence. That only the highest quality is okay for you. And if you can start to get comfortable with that, and again, this is a tricky one. This gets really, you know, especially the way we're trained in the spirit, you know, not even just the New Age, down the road, you know, down throughout history, it wasn't okay for us to claim quality. You know, it's been said that Jesus the mystic, his robes were woven with the finest threads, and his garments were made with one single thread, right? And so there's a level of quality that is inherent in that degree of wisdom. You know, Buddha, even though he hung out under the Bodhi tree and rejected materialism, realize that in that statement, Buddha didn't reject materialism in that, you know, he was always well fed, he was always well clothed, he always had everything he needed. What he meant, what was meant by in rejecting materialism, meaning means that both of these avatars, they understood the creative equation, that it wasn't the material world that had the power, it was the spiritual world that had the power, and the material world was an expression of that. But so if we claim quality, it doesn't mean that we're giving power to the material world. What it does is it means we are refining how we use our energy so that we don't continue to make the choices in the material world that will keep us stuck in the old patterns of limitation. When we start doing our mystical work, our friendships are going to change. The quality of people that we hang out with is going to change. And for a while, that may feel weird and lonely as the quality of your friendships change, the quality of your family relationships change, the quality of who you hang out with changes. And for a while, that can be lonely because your circle of quality people, you start to be picky about it. You start to be picky about your food. Start to be picky about the entertainment you participate in. You start to get picky about the kind of books you're going to read. Quality is really, really, really important. Beauty becomes really important to a mystic. Even if it's just a tiny one single rose in, or one single flower in a bud vase in the house, that's a reflection of quality. And so I want you to look into your life and see, okay, where can I start bringing in more quality into my world? Can I make the agreement with myself that I'm only going to eat the highest quality food that I can afford? Can I make an agreement that I'm going to wear the highest quality clothes that I can afford? And even if I can't afford high quality clothes, then can I make sure that my appearance is of the highest quality, meaning I am pulled together. Even if I don't have a lot of money, at least now I'm going to express quality. I'm going to live quality. I'm going to walk through my life like I exude quality, because at the root, in my heart and my soul and my being, I am of the highest quality. And so what starts to happen is as you claim those higher levels of quality within yourself, they start to be reflected in the external world. And you can work both sides of the coin at the same time. You can be refining your inner world and shaping the inner qualities of your life. And you can also be doing it on the external world at the same time. Realize that the little tweaks and adjustments that you make in the physical world, they start to accelerate and amplify the changes, right? So even if the only high quality you can afford is to buy one rose a week and put that in a little bud vase on your table, that becomes your declaration of quality and beauty and excellence in your life. And, you know, go through everything in your world and say, okay, quality food, quality rest, quality learning, quality downtime, quality relationships, quality friendships, quality work, quality play, quality engagement, right? Where can I bring more quality? And know that your desire to have only excellence and only the highest quality is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. If somebody said, okay, I'm going to give you a choice between this Porsche or this Mercedes and this little box car, and there's no expense to you either way, which would you choose? If somebody were to say to you, I'm going to give you the option of these wonderful people, highest quality, but there's only two of them, or I'm going to give you a room full of people, but none of them are awake, none of them are enlightened, none of them have any idea what's going on here, what would you choose? You would choose the high quality people, even though there's only two of them. High quality chocolate versus, you know, a candy bar that's been sitting on a shelf for 4 years. What would you choose? Quality is okay. You're allowed to choose it. So I encourage you to embrace quality. The second cue is question, to question everything I've taught you, to question everything that you've heard from me. Not question it as if to say, you know, what the hell is Simone talking about? She's in, you know, who the hell does she think she is kind of question. But like, all right, that's interesting. I'm going to go out and I'm going to use it and let's see. Let's see if this works. Let's see if what she's talking about has any merit. And to not only do that with me, but to do that with everything you hear in the world. Question it. Do not accept anything at face value. And even the Buddha said that. Don't accept anything I've said unless it agrees with your own common sense and your own values. And go out and practice it. Question everything. Question everything your church tells you. Question everything your parents tell you. Question everything your friends tell you. Question everything that religion tells you. Question everything that politics tells you. And what you're going to start to notice is that most of it isn't true. Most of it is based on the flawed understanding that the external world is what is real and the inner world doesn't exist. So question the things everybody tells you, even and especially your teachers. And then also start asking yourself really big, important questions. Really big, important questions. What would it look like if I tried this? What is the sun really? What is my greatest skill and talent? What would happen if I wasn't afraid? Who do you suppose would show up if I really put myself out on the line? What do you suppose I'd be capable of if I gave myself a deadline and committed to it and held myself accountable? Or better yet, got somebody else to hold me accountable? What would it look like if I allowed quality in my life 1,000% with no exceptions? What would that look like? How am I better at most things than I've ever given myself credit for? How is all the difficulty in my life made me a better, stronger person? Start asking questions. Be curious. Don't take anything that life has shown you at face value ever, whether it's coming from a teacher or from your past. You know, look at your past and go, how did that really serve me? It sucked. It was hard. It dragged me through the frickin' meat grinder, but what was the lesson there? What did it show me about myself? What did it show me about others? What are other people showing me about themselves now? Right? What are they showing me? If you've got people who are showing you who they are over and over again, then they're showing you their quality. Right? And you get to decide then, is this something that I want in my life? That's another question. Is this something I want in my life? Is this something I want to experience for the next 70 years on the planet? Is this something that I want to spend time doing? Am I willing to change? Am I willing to be flexible? Am I willing to try something different? That when I started asking questions like that, my career really took off. Especially the question, how can I do this differently? How can I do this differently, whether it was with my art or with how I practiced my spirituality or how I taught? I didn't want to be like anybody else. All right. I wanted to bring a higher refined level of quality and excellence and elegance to my art and to my teaching. And so I asked those questions. How can I be different? Not how can I be better, but how can I be different? So start asking questions. Hows, the whats, the wheres, the whens, the why. Start asking those things. And what will happen is if you're doing this work along this level of alignment with peace and power, then answers, your intuition will come online and say, here's the answer to this. Here's the answer to that. Here's the answer to this. Let's try this. Let's go here. Let's go there. Your innovative intelligence, your intuition, your true higher mind will start to guide you and direct you to find you solutions. But most people on the planet do not like to ask questions. First of all, they don't want to look stupid, so they won't ask questions. And I encourage people to ask questions. This is why I do the monthly coaching calls, so that you guys will come online and ask questions. There are no stupid questions. Questions, questions, questions. Somebody who asks a question shows me their level of brilliance, really. I love people who ask questions. when somebody tells me that they know everything, I run away because nobody does. I certainly don't know everything. I'm asking questions all the time. And the more questions that I ask of myself, how do I do that? How do I get to the next level with my own teaching, with my own learning, with my own understanding? How do I get to the next level? How can I be different? How can I improve? How can I grow? Oh, then your intuition starts to come online and say, here, let's go here, let's go here, let's go here. How can I have more courage? How can I have more energy? How do I find more of my tribe? All right, it starts to come online. But it won't come unless you ask. Again, this brings us back to the idea of commitment. A question opens the door for your intuition to guide you. Commitment opens the door for clarity to show up and how to get you there. It's like entering the GPS in a car, right? If you don't enter the GPS into your cell phone or into your car, your GPS system can't guide you. And so this is the beauty and the benefit of asking great questions. Okay. And you can write out questions in your journal. You know, this is the question I had today. And you just write them out. And then you'll start to notice that over time, you'll start to get these little ahas, these little epiphanies that go, ha, 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 there it is. Even something simple as, where's my keys? I've been noticing in my house lately that stuff is disappearing. And I haven't quite figured out what's going on yet there. But like a blanket disappeared. Scissors disappeared. Like they were there 1 second, I swear, and then they were gone. A blanket that was sitting in the laundry pile, gone. So either there's a burglar in my house who's invisible, or I've opened some portal to some pesky little multidimensional thief who needed a blanket and a pair of scissors and a multitude of other things. And you start asking those questions. Okay, where did I put my keys? What's happening here? What am I missing? What can I see better? Right? What portal have I opened? Where'd my blanket go? Right? Start asking those kind of questions and you'll start getting guidance and information to support you. Okay? So those are our cues. So if you have any other cues that come to mind for you, write them down. And, you know, questions sort of leads us to our first R, which is receptivity. Which is sort of a partner to perception. But to be receptive means to be able to be open to receiving energy, receptivity, open to information, receptivity to open, be open and available to abundance, receptivity to be open and available to prosperity, receptivity to be open to love. To be receptive means to have your receptors, your ability to connect, engage, notice, perceive, sense, feel, for those things to be on and open and turned up to full volume. We have sense receptors in our eyeballs that link us to the brain. We have smell receptors in our nose that again links us to the brain. We have sense receptors in every nerve in our fingertips that links us to the brain. It's our ability to be receptive gives us the ability to engage with our environment and gather information from it that supports us in navigating through our existence here. And so when we ask questions, our receptivity opens. Now, what tends to happen, and as we do all of this work with peace and power and perception and noose and you know all of the stuff that we talked about in the other chapters of the A through Zs, that all of this work activates our receptivity. And this ability to choose quality gives us the ability to be receptive to the higher quality, the refined qualities of experience. And refinement is certainly another R that we're going to talk about here. That this question of quality opens our ability to have receptivity to refinement. Right? the ability to be open, the ability to receive, the ability to perceive, the ability to accept, the ability to, you know, think of a radio tuner that is tuned to a certain radio station that gets smooth jazz music. That radio antenna, that radio tuner is tuned to be receptive to that kind of jazz music. Now, that jazz music is flowing through the ether, flowing through is invisible all around us. But so too are there radio stations that play heavy metal, that play, that play rock and roll, that play new age spiritual music, that play gospel. All of that music is flowing around us invisibly at all times. All of that information is always there. But it's only when we tune ourselves to be receptive, we want to listen to smooth jazz, we become in alignment with that, then that gives us the ability to hear that particular radio station and keep the other radio stations that we don't want to listen to, that we don't like, that aren't in alignment with our quality, it keeps them away from us. We can't hear them, which is fine. And there's somebody down the street who wants to listen to heavy metal. Their receptivity is tuned to that information in the field, and that's what they get to listen to. So all of this stuff that we're doing with our modern mystical work, with our at our core root, our intention is to align and engage with source energy and learn how to deliberately partner with it to shape our reality. That's our goal. And so that intent shapes our ability to become receptive to the type of wisdom, the type of information, the type of guidance, type of alignment, the type of relationships that are in alignment with our state of high quality and this refinement that a mystic insists on. And all of the greatest mystics in history, and there were a lot that certainly we don't know about, but there were others who are more commonly known, and there was certainly the religious mystics, you know, the Jesuses and the Buddhas and the Kuan Yins. And, you know, if you ever hear stories about those people and you hear stories about other mystics who may be less well known, they're always, you know, their lives may not have been big lives. They certainly weren't famous, but they were high quality lives, right? Surrounded with beauty and good fellowship and good food and good wine and good music and this refinement and essentially at our root, as we become more open and receptive to these more divine refined energies, again, it doesn't become about ego. It becomes about how do you want your life to express itself? I want my life to be refined, you know, beautiful energy, beautiful environment, beautiful friends, beautiful work, beautiful expression, beautiful connection, etc., right? Refinement is our goal as a mystic, right? We're refining our spiritual lead and we're refining it into spiritual gold. Now, as a mystic, we understand that we need our lead. We love our lead. We don't diminish our lead. We don't judge our lead. We don't hate our lead. We just say, I want to refine this because I know it can be more brilliant. It can carry more energy. It can reflect more light. It can express greater frequencies of beauty. And so what we're doing in this process, refinement is essential. A grape, when it becomes wine, and then when it becomes brandy, that is a refinement of the grape. A raw diamond, a raw stone, you look at it when it comes out of the earth, it's just a stone. It doesn't reflect any light. It's kind of boring to look at. It's not all that pretty. But you start to shape it and cut away the things that aren't essential. You start to refine it. It then becomes a thing of beauty that reflects more light, that holds more power, that is more inspired and inspiring, that can shape love, that can, engender connection. And just so think of these things as refinement. When a sculptor sculpts a piece of stone or a piece of clay, it's a very, you know, the stone or the clay is just a blob of nothing. And then over time, things are removed, things are refined that makes it beautiful. But the sculptor needs the raw stone. The sculptor needs the raw bunch of clay, loves that raw stone, loves that clay, and knows that that raw material is essential to the ultimate gift at the end. And so refinement becomes something that is creative. You know, that is the artistic process, isn't it? Turning a raw blank canvas into a painting. You're refining colors and shapes. That is the creative process in and of itself, is this idea of refinement. Now, as a mystic, we're wanting to refine ourselves. But if we don't want to refine ourselves, that's fine. If we're okay with the way things are in our world, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with it. And we say, you know what? I'm okay with where I'm at. And that's where we need to be anyway, right? In being in this position of order to say, okay, here's where I'm at right now. And I'm okay with it, but I want to refine myself anyway. I love myself and all my dysfunction. It's okay. I accept it, but I want to refine it. I want greater quality to emerge through me, as me, in my life. And that's okay. We're not judging ourselves for being at whatever stage we're at of spiritual led. We're not making ourselves bad or wrong or shameful. We're just saying, I'd like there to be more light that moves through me as me. And in order to do that, I've got to refine some things. And just like a sculptor, I'm going to have to clear away some of the clay that is blocking this my authentic form. Or like a stone carver, I'm going to have to carve away some of the stone that's blocking me from my true nature. Like Michelangelo said of the David, if you've ever been to Florence and you've seen the statue of David in real life, it is like, it was one of the most powerful experiences I've ever had in my life to see that piece of stone be alive. It's just gobsmacking. Now, Michelangelo, that is a process of refinement. The raw stone, Michelangelo said David was in the raw stone. He was always there. I just released him. And so it's the same with us. That David, that perfected piece of humanity is within us. We just need to release it. And that comes through refinement and brings us to the idea, the third R, which is release. Release. As an aspect of refinement, we need to be able to look at ourselves and say, okay, without judgment, without shame, without making ourselves bad or wrong or less than or evil or broken, we need to look at ourselves honestly and with truth and clarity and say, What do I need to release in order that I can accentuate and accelerate my refinement and shape my receptivity? Thinking of ourselves as artists, thinking of ourselves as Michelangelo or Leonardo da Vinci, and looking at ourselves and looking for, with an artist perspective, and just say, okay, what do I need to release? What needs to be let go of here? What's not serving my vision of my spiritual gold? What's standing in the way of me stepping into that level of perfection that I know exists within me, that I know is calling me forward? What do I need to release? And that might be habits of laziness or victimization, or habits of playing the same, not catching yourself when you're playing the same mental patterns over and over again. Habits of playing small, habits of talking yourself out of a big dream that you may have. What might need to be released are attitudes of self-judgment. What might need to be released is looking at your life as, even if it's been really, really bad, to be able to really look at your life honestly and say, okay, how have those things served me? Those traumas, those betrayals, those awful things that happened to me in my childhood or from people I knew, and how are they propelling me forward? Can I release my judgment of those things? Can I release the stories that are attached to my life and to where I'm at now and where I've come from? What do I need to release? Do I need to release false humility? Do I need to release the idea that I'm not good enough? Do I need to release the idea that people are going to judge me or shame me if I step into some higher levels of power? Do I need to release other people from feeling like they're responsible for whether my life is good or bad? Do I need to release myself from other people's power? What do I need to release? What do I need to remove? What do I need to let go of? What do I really need to spend time with and looking at and saying, do I even want that anymore? And can I release it? And you'll start to get a list of things that you can release. And then it becomes a matter of you making a choice and saying, yeah, I'm ready to release that. It might be scary because I don't know what's on the other end of it. But you can make those choices of releasing, and you can always change your mind and go back. But once you've made that step forward, you're going to realize that the choice you made, even though it's scary, is the choice that was appropriate for you. Right? Once you've made a step forward in growth, it's very, very hard to go back, even if the step forward is challenging and afraid and scary making. It's very difficult to retreat. Retreat. There's another one. It's very difficult to retreat. There's a mystical statement in the Bible that talks about Lot and his wife Sarah as they're leaving the city of Sodom and Gomorrah. Sodom and Gomorrah is burning. And Lot and Sarah are leaving this town, these two towns, these twin cities. And they're rushing out of the city, not unlike what's going on in Southern California right now with all the wildfires. People are rushing away. They're rushing away from, now in the mystical story here, Sodom and Gomorrah represents the material world, right? Stuff that is created and shaped by form, created and shaped and exists as a false idol, right? Again, mystically, we know that the material world has no power. Sarah and Lot are leaving Sodom and Gomorrah to retreat inwardly, to go inside, to retreat into the inner world. And they're out in the desert and they're told not to look back. Don't look back. And Sarah, as they're rushing out of town, Sarah turns to look back and watch the city of Sodom and Gomorrah burn. And she's turned into a pillar of salt. So the mystical meaning of this story is if you continue to look back into the material world and return and retreat to those systems that are artificial, that are false, that have no creative power, then salt, you will be turned into a pillar of salt. Salt, the symbolism of salt is that it was a purifier. It mummified things. It kept things from changing. And so Sarah was turned into a pillar of salt. So essentially what it's saying is, if you continue to retreat and look back and go back and look back into the material world, instead of always looking forward into your inner nature, the world of, you know, they were out in the desert, the world of your inner nature, then you're going to be frozen in time. You will always go back to where you started and you'll be frozen there. So it's really, really important to realize that as you start to think of things that you can release, all right, what can I release in my physical world that's going to be give me the freedom to move deeply and powerfully into my invisible realms of creativity? And what people will tend to do is they'll take that leap and they'll move forward and then they'll get scared and they'll go back to the old world. They'll go back to the old stuff. They'll go back to the old boyfriend or girlfriend. They'll go back to the old friendships. They'll go back to the old job. They'll go back to the old ways of making money. They'll go back to the old habits of spending, of sleeping, of watching media, and they'll get frozen. They'll get stuck. And so realize that if you get clear about what you want to release, you could say, I'm committing to this. This is what I'm choosing to let go of. And you're committing to being able to let go of that. Again, commitment will lead to clarity. Then for a while, it might feel weird. And so you need to avoid the conditioning of going back, even if it's really scary. Going back, because that's going back into those old patterns is what keeps us from moving forward. All right. And when we retreat back into the old habits, then we, just like Sarah, are frozen like a pillar of salt and cannot move forward into the new life that we're building. All right. So those are our R's. And now we're rolling into S, which is our last letter for this portion of the module. And the first S is shadow. We've been talking a lot about shadow through the course of our modern mystic stuff, and shadow sort of works in partnership with polarity. We as mystics, we love the shadow. The shadow of ourselves is, again, just like darkness is a powerful equation as it relates to light in the 3D reality, shadow is a part of who we are. We cannot claim all of our light until we've integrated and claimed all of our shadow. And our shadow exists in two ways. We've got our light shadow, which is the good parts of ourselves that we've suppressed, oppressed, or repressed in order to survive in our environment. Our joy, our happiness, our creativity, our power, our humor, our wit, our talent, all of that good stuff that, you know, our love, our kindness, our generosity, our happiness, we've suppressed that. That's our light shadow. And we've made ourselves wrong. We've made it bad for us to have those things and express them. And then there's the dark shadow, which is the stuff that we judge as bad, as less than, as evil, as dark, as shameful, as non-spiritual. We've judged those things and put those in the shadow. Those are the things that are, you know, we might view as jealousy or stupidity or shame or anger or rage or a willfulness. And we've suppressed all of those things, and we've made ourselves really, really, really bad for having those things, really, really wrong. We've put those things in the shadow. We've hidden them. So just like an artist creating a painting, we need light shadow and we need dark shadow. Otherwise, the canvas would be completely white. There would be no dimensionality to it at all. We need light shadow and dark shadow. How a mystic uses light shadow and dark shadow is we bring it online. We recognize it. We see that it's there and we shine our light on it. We say, aha, I see you. I see you, my inner joy. And I see you, my inner sense of humor. And I see you, my inner creative person. And oh man, I'm so sorry that I've stuck you in the dark and pretended you weren't there. Oh my gosh, how painful it's been for me to put you in the darkness. It is. It's painful for us to put any of these aspects of shadow. It becomes hurtful. And realize that all of these things are energies and they are alive within our consciousness. And if they're suppressed, oppressed, or repressed, or hidden away, they'll find ways to be seen in our world without our permission. They'll show up. And the way that the light shadow does that is it gives us ideas. It says, oh, let's go for this idea. Oh, let's start a web page. Oh, let's write a book. Oh, let's find a relationship. Oh, let's start a commune. Oh, let's bake chocolate. You know, let's paint a painting. And we ignore it. We say, no, I'm not good enough. Oh, I can't do that. Oh, people are going to think I'm flaky, or people are going to judge me. So that stuff gets suppressed and it hurts. It becomes really painful. We start to judge ourselves and be really angry at ourselves for hurting that. We start to develop self-loathing and self-hatred and unworthiness because those light things have been pushed away. And then with our dark shadow, it's also very painful. We push away our inner anger. We push away our inner jealousy. We push away our inner hate. We push away our inner greed. We push away our inner anger and any of that stuff that we push away. And again, just like with the light shadow, it is an energetic impulse that gets stored in our consciousness. And if it's pushed away and suppressed, oppressed and repressed and made bad or wrong, it, because it's running in our subconscious, it's going to take shape in our life, whether we want it to or not. That energy has to go somewhere. And so a dark shadow will manifest itself as health issues, relationship issues, bad luck with money, car accidents, a streak of bad luck, a streak of bad people showing up in our world, the same relationship happening over and over again. So realize that these energies of shadow, light and dark shadow, are a part of us. As mystics, we embrace them. And as we embrace the light shadow, then the things that are really lovely about us start to come online, and our talent gets activated, and our creativity comes activated, and our joy comes back online, and our spontaneous nature, and our humanity, and our humor, and our childlike wonder, and all of that stuff starts to come online, and we start to step into our true creative power. And as we start to release our dark shadow and really look at it, we're not trying to change it. We're not trying to change our angry shadow into a loving shadow. We're letting our angry shadow come forward and tell us why it's so angry, why it's been so wounded, why it feels so shamed, why it feels so abandoned, what it's mad at. All of that energy is then given a safe place to move and flow and release and be seen and brought into the light. And when that energy is then given a place to move, through witnessing and consciousness and awareness, the energetic charge that's carried within that shadow starts to become neutralized. It's no longer destructive. It's no longer running unconsciously. And when it's no longer running unconsciously, when it's brought into consciousness, it loses its destructive power because we're now aware of it. And that's all those shadows need and want from us as mystics, is they want to be seen. They want to be heard. They want to be acknowledged. They want to be loved. They want to be recognized and accepted as a part of who we are. If we continue to pretend they're not there, if we continue to make them wrong for existing, the dark shadows will sabotage our life, and the light shadows will become twisted and distorted and cause us pain. And so it's very, very important. And this is, again, part of our polarity work as mystics. We love working with shadow. And we make friends with these energies, even the ones that we would never in a million years admit to having. Our hateful, wrathful, rageful, jealous, petty, greedy shadows. And you can start making friends with those things and claim them. They stop becoming destructive. And when you can start making friends with the light shadows, the part of us that are shiny and glittery and golden, and we let those ones thrive, then all aspects of our being, both our light shadow, our dark shadow, and our medium shadow, which is could be considered our physical body, start to come online and work as a partnership. And then all of the energy that we carry is freed up then to serve us in one direction. People tend to think that if we let our dark shadows, if we bring them forward into the light, that they'll somehow take over our life and we'll become, ruled by evil, or we'll become egoic, or we'll become selfish and petty. And it's actually quite the opposite. When those energies are given, brought into the light and given permission to exist, they actually start to serve us in beneficial ways. Because a dark shadow, when brought into the light, can serve our strength and our power and our grace and our courage and our momentum and our will and our steadfastness, and can, help us keep safe boundaries and help us stay in our integrity about what we will and we will not accept. So as it relates to shadow, I want you to look at all those parts of yourself that you were shamed for having that were good. Your talent, your light, your humor, your creativity, your playfulness, and bring them forward. And then the same with your dark shadow, your inner bitch, your inner jerk, your inner selfish, your inner wounded, your inner victim, your inner bad girl, your inner bad boy, bring them forward. Your inner predator, your inner prey. And bring them forward and watch how they start to serve you. And they will. When you're no longer afraid of them, and when you love them and accept them and bring them into order, they become refined elements of yourself. and they will no longer be there to get in your way. Okay. The second S, and actually there's probably two parts of this S, and I would group these two together in stillness and slowness. A mystic is very still on the inside, very, very aware, very balanced, very ordered. There's a great stillness. And this inner stillness manifests itself as moving slowly and deliberately in the world. And I notice this really profoundly in my own practice. I notice that as my mystical powers become more refined, that there's less urgency in my world. I don't force or push or rush anywhere anymore. Even if I know something's important, I'm still able to address the important things from a sense of stillness, inner stillness, and a slowness. I want you to think of the idea of a Japanese tea ceremony. If you've ever been to one of these tea ceremonies, it's one of the most beautiful things you'll ever see. And the tea geisha, if that's what you want to call her, she prepares everything with a great degree of inner stillness. It's a ceremony. And there's a very sacred, there's another S, it's a very sacred process, this slowness that the water is poured, each teacup is heated and cleaned and blessed and placed before the person, and the tea is steeped, and there's this beautiful slow ritual. And it's almost like the geisha is a little wizard, and she's casting a spell. There's another S. She's casting a spell over this tea, and she's bringing all of the life force from source energy. There's another S, source. She's bringing all of the life force of source energy, and through all of her very slow, deliberate movement, she's infusing the tea with the life force of source energy itself. Now, if she were to do it quickly and rush through the process, it would lose its sacred nature and source energy would be completely obliterated. And so all we need to do is look out in the world and look how fast it's moving and how quickly everybody does stuff. And how that manifests itself as a lack of sacredness and a lack of access to source energy. So I want you to, even if there's something really important and air quotes here, urgent that needs to be done, things are important, sure, but you can still take action on important things from a sense of stillness and taking your time with them. I always noticed that whenever I was getting ready for a big art show, that sometimes I'd be left with very little time. And I'd be rushing and I'd be rushing and I'd be rushing and I'd be rushing. And stuff would get broken. Stuff would get lost. Stuff would get forgotten. Stuff would get left behind. Or I'd be really pushing to get something done, and I'd realize at the very end, at the very ninth minute, that it wasn't even necessary. And I'd been pushing to get all this stuff done, and it wasn't even essential. That less is more. You know, when I was doing an art show, I'd think, oh, I have to have 20 pieces, but it actually worked out better to have only 10. And I could take my time with the process itself because so much more of me was present in the process, that the things that I did complete were so much more meaningful, so much more refined, so much more full of source energy. And besides the fact that nobody at the art show knew that I was working on 20 pieces, they loved the 10 that were there. So I want you to see where you can start to bring in inner stillness and more deliberate, slow care with what you're doing moment to moment, and work on breaking the habit of needing to rush to get stuff done. This rushing to get things done that says, you know, you need to have a list of 20 things to do and you need to get them all done. I realize that there's probably only two or three, even though I'm working on a lot of projects and pretty big projects, that there's really only two or three really important things that need to get done in a given day. And they take up, you know, a certain chunk of time, like recording this. So after I'm done this, I've got other things to do, but I'm taking my time, right? Stillness and slowness in preparing the program, stillness and slowness in getting it presented and getting it recorded, stillness and slowness in washing my dishes, stillness and slowness in how in walking my dog, in taking a bath, in washing my car. I want you to notice how quickly, how much you rush. And the more slowness from that position point of peace and power that you can bring to the things you're going to do, you'll notice that they become more sacred. And as a result, they become more infused with source energy. Again, think of the idea of turning a grape into wine. That's a slow process. And then it's an even slower process of turning that wine then into brandy. You know, think of creating an essential oil from a plant. You know, trying to get rose oil out of roses. That requires time. You can't rush those things that ultimately, when they're done, are imbued with quality. So again, this brings us back to the cue of our quality. Think of how much quality comes when you are being present in the now, taking your time with and being aware of the profound energy that moves through you as you are being present, right? So practice that while you're making dinner. Think of yourself as one of those tea geishas who, you know, takes this wonderful ceremony to the height of beauty and sacredness. Right? There's great time, great attention to detail. It becomes very luxurious. It becomes very deliberate. It becomes very sacred. Do that with everything. How you get dressed in the morning. And if that means you need to get up an hour earlier to have this slow, sacred time, then do that. And what you'll start to notice is the things that you thought were important, but really aren't, they start to fall away, again, in alignment with this idea of quality. And the things that you do have time for, the essential things, like essential oil, they rise to the surface, and those are the things that you address first. Those are things that are most crucial. And all of the stuff that's unimportant starts to fall away as it relates to your idea of being able to release and shape refinement. What's essential? What do I need? Do I need to be rushing around 24 hours a day, 7 days a week? Some people think that makes them important. Is that what you want? Are you willing to release the need to be rushing around all the time? Right? You can be 10 times more effective and efficient if you engage with your life in this sacred way through slowness and inner stillness as it relates to your action. You're going to find that your action is far more effective. And then the final S for today is sovereignty, to be sovereign. Now, a sovereign is a divine ruler. You know, the kings and queens of ancient Egypt and ancient Mesopotamia and, you know, even ancient England and Rome and all the, they were considered sovereign. They were the divine rulers of their kingdom. Well, as mystics, we claim that same sovereign power, that we are the divine sacred rulers of our own kingdom, that we are in alignment with Nous, the divine mind, that partnership with divine mind is the mind with which we rule our kingdom. And as we come in alignment with that sovereign divine mind, then we start to become divinely self-governed, divinely self-ruled, divinely self-ordered, divinely self-directed, divinely self-sustained, divinely self-aware, that our word, our thoughts, our mind, our ideas, our nous, our level of awareness and intelligence and power and peace becomes the level of mind with which we rule our individual kingdom. We claim all of our power, we call all of our power back from the outer external world, the physical world of reality. And we call all of that power back to ourselves, to our divine nature. And we say, I know that I am the creator of my reality, that my inner world shapes my outer world, that my degrees of consciousness shapes my levels of having, and that I claim ownership of my relationship with this divine intelligence, and I claim sovereign power in my reality. I am the ruler here. I am the shaper. I am the creator in partnership with source energy, in partnership with nous. I choose. I shape. I create. I release all that is unnecessary. I release it. All that is noble, all that is beautiful, all that is refined, all that is in high quality, all that is excellent, all that is good, I claim for myself, for my world, for my kingdom, for my heart, for my mind, for my body, and no one and nothing outside of me has any power. So we use this sovereign nature. We understand the principles of the mystical processes, and we look out into the physical world and say, I understand how all of this is created. And I understand that most of the people out there have no idea how it's created, but I do know, and I'm in charge of me. I rule my kingdom. What I will and what I will not create is up to me. And so I let every external person, place, thing, rule, law, political party, social media outlet, whatever it is, I let them all be how they are, and I claim my power. I am in charge of my destiny and what that means for me. And that becomes our purpose, remembering that sovereign power, and however it wants to take shape, right? If we decide to use our sovereign abilities, our sovereign choice to go and live in an ashram on the top of some mountaintop, then that's fine. That's our choice. As sovereigns, we get to decide that that's what we want to do. If that calls to us and that is how we want to live our lives, then that's okay. If we decide that we want to use our sovereign skill to start a business and help a bunch of people, then that's fine. We get to do that. If we decide we want to start a charity and, you know, start a nonprofit and raise money for children, then that's great. If that's what we want to do, then that's what we want to do. The world is not keeping some big, deep, dark secret about what our purpose is from us. We get to decide. We get to decide. And source energy will use us as us in what we're already good at, what we're already inspired by, and what already calls us forward for us to be like, that's a really interesting idea. Now, as the sovereign ruler of my kingdom, what would that look like for me to dive into that possibility? You're asking questions, right? How can I take ownership of that impulse and that impression to go do that? How can I refine myself so that I'm the person capable of taking that kind of action? What do I need to release to be able to step forward in that way? And how can I do it through, how can I take those actions through stillness and awareness and in the now so that I can step into this sovereign choice? And that sovereign choice then, again, brings us back to the nous, the N-O-U-S, where my will and the will of the Father are one, which means your will and the will of the creative force are the same thing. That's sovereign power. And you say, this inspired idea has come forward. I've made decisions about quality and what I will and will not accept in my life right now. And then the source energy feels that impulse and that impression in you and that power in you. And you link, you connect, you become one. And so then you've got the force, the power of source energy running through you as you, supporting the dreams and the desires and the goals and the choices and the commandments and the declares and the decrees that you've made from this sovereign position. So you realize from this sovereign position that no one, nothing outside of you has any power. And over time, through that practice, that starts to then become that level of mind, noose, that you are always coming from. It starts to become your new energetic habit. Okay. It's like you are a king or a queen in your own kingdom. You wear a crown. You are divinely, a divine spark of source energy. That is your gift, your birthright. And you claim ownership of that. Break apart the constructs that stand in the way of that, these shadows of limitation that say you're not good, you're not worthy, you're bad, you're shameful, you're wrong. And this sovereign light then will start to move through you as you and take shape in your world in the direction that you want it to. Organically, beautifully, elegantly, slowly, stillly, all from a position point of power. Right. So I'm going to wrap up. This brings us through to the end of this part three of our ABCs. So I encourage you to, as you're going about, you know, review the letters. And if more come to your mind as you're having conversations or as you're out and about driving the car or washing your dishes, write them down. You know, there's probably 1,000 more letters or 1,000 more words that we could cover. But obviously we have to limit it. But that doesn't mean that they're not still out there. So I'm going to wrap up part three, and I hope you enjoyed this part. It's a really juicy, rich module here with all of these things that continue to amplify our mystical powers, and I hope you have a chance to put them to work, bring them into mind, and I'll see you very soon in part four, where we will wrap up the final ABCs and cover letters T through Z. All right, mystics. I'll see you soon on the inside. Take care.